I made another stab at a insert in your bulletin if you want to use that this morning to take some notes as I'm able to. I like to do that. I try to, so if you can, want to follow along. I'm hoping that the PowerPoint will work today. We had a little snafu for some reason back on Easter, Good Friday service, so wasn't able to show all the slides, but today I'm hoping that it will work out. There was a recent Forbes article noted that in the first 3 months of this particular year, 8 different cruise liners, those that take cruises around the Caribbean and other parts of the world on tours and things, 8 cruise lines in 3 months contracted the very contagious norovirus. There was one, I got it here, the Royal Caribbean's Explorer of the Seas had 600 of its guests come down with a norovirus, and they had to bring it back into dock. They had to clean everything up, and it kind of gives you a new meaning to the old phrase, being seasick. So that was the Forbes article. There was also a recent report that came out this last week that gives a new meaning to dirty money. Researchers from the New York University took a dollar bill and were just kind of under the microscope looking at it to determine how many germs are on there, and they found some 3,000 different germs. So that kind of gives you a whole new meaning to wanting to launder your money. So our message is in Luke chapter 5 and verses 12 through 16 this morning. And we're going to be comparing the physical and the spiritual this morning. The same way that Jesus meets physical needs is the same way that Jesus will meet spiritual needs. And we see a great example of it in our text this morning. And we want to consider 3 points, and let's see if we've got them up there. Yes, we want to look at the condition of the man, the compassion by the Messiah, and the circulation among the multitudes. Those 3 points. And so the first one we want to look at is in verse chapter 12. Can we start over? There was a recent article. I'm flustered because I normally put my little bookmarky thing here, ribbon, where the passage should go, and I didn't do that this morning when I was going back over the message, because I'm still in Isaiah 53 from last week. So let me turn to where you already are in Luke chapter 5. I'm getting there. Maybe it's because Robin was gone for a whole half a week, and I'm out of sorts now. So, okay, I'm better. Verse 12, chapter 5, the Gospel of Luke. While Jesus was in one of the towns, a man came along who was covered with leprosy. When he saw Jesus, he fell with his face to the ground and begged him, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Let's consider the condition of the man. Three of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, each record this particular event. Our account is recorded by Luke, and it begins in an unnamed town. Unlike knowing the town where Jesus was born in Bethlehem that had been prophesied in Micah 5:2, this town is a town of inconsequence. It isn't important in the total scheme of what Luke is trying to convey in this passage. So he just leaves it as an unnamed town. And it could have been any town in Palestine. What is important is understand the implications for what Luke is wanting to convey in this particular passage. So we read that Jesus was in one of these towns. And we don't know if Jesus was there just passing through as he did from time to time on his way from one place to another, and he traveled, just went through the town, and he just happened to be there when this particular event occurred. Or if, like we learned from Capernaum, that he stayed there for a period of time and was teaching in the synagogue. We don't know the length of time that Jesus was there, just like we don't know the town in which he was visiting. What we do know is that he was in a town, and there is an important lesson for us to learn about that is going to take place. And our text continues by noting that while he was in this town, there was a man who came up to him. Now, it wasn't necessarily unusual for someone to approach Jesus. It happened all the time. I can think of, right off the top of my head, three different reasons why people may have approached the Lord. It could have been that they were wanting to hear him teach. Oftentimes, great crowds of people would gather because there was something that he was teaching and they wanted to listen. And they were curious because, as we noted before and we'll note again, that he taught differently than the other scribes and Pharisees who were teachers of the law. What he had to say was unique and fresh, and it was heart-wrenching and compelling and challenging. It was different than what they were used to hearing. So people could approach him to hear him teach. Other people approached him because there was something that they wanted for him to do. And in this case, as it is in the other cases that we'll also investigate, this person wanted to have something done for him. They wanted some kind of a miracle to take place in their life. And then the third group of people who would approach him were questioning and challenging him. And typically they were the Pharisees or the lawyers or the religious leaders who wanted to try and catch him in something that was contrary to the law and so refute his claims and be able to show that he was really a charlatan, he wasn't true. Our story is about the second type of person, the one who approached him. There was a specific need that this man came to the Lord with. The need was leprosy, and he wanted Jesus to do something about it. And there are four things that I want just to want us to note about the condition of the man. And the first is that the disease was unbearable. The disease was unbearable. The man had leprosy. We aren't going to take the time to go back to Leviticus chapter 13, but in the law, Leviticus 13 shows what is to be done if a person is contracted with what they think might be leprosy, is to go to the priest, and the priest was to take a look at it and then quarantine the individual for a period of time, come back and look at it again. If it was bigger, more pronounced, then another 8 days would be passed, and then they would look at it again. And so there was a whole system of things that they were supposed to do in the event that it was leprosy. So you can take some time to read through Leviticus 13. Luke, being the observant doctor that he was, said in our text that he was covered with or full of leprosy. What that tells us is that this man who came to Jesus had an advanced and aggressive form of leprosy. It was in the stages that were near the end. It was pronounced and it was aggravated. This man had a very serious condition. Leprosy was a dreadful disease. It primarily attacked the body's nervous system so that the leper eventually loses the ability to feel pain. The infected parts of the body go numb and eventually lose the sensitivity. Leprosy technically never killed anyone. Death generally came to the damaged area because the body didn't feel pain, and so they would do things, and not feeling the pain, then things would happen to the body. It forms lesions on the skin. It can disfigure the face by collapsing the nose and causing the skin to fold. Some have called it the lion's disease because the appearance of the face with the folds on the tissue cause it to look like just the face of a lion as it would pronounce itself. The skin would bunch around the eyes and the ears with a specific odor to it. Contrary to popular opinion, leprosy does not eat away the skin or the flesh. Due to the loss of feeling caused by the disease, extremities would wear away. It caused horrible disfigurement. We can just picture the man coming toward Jesus. The progression of the disease begins with pain in a certain area. And the pain then is followed by numbness, and the numbness is followed by spots. The spots would turn thick and glossy and then scaly. The spots would become dirty sores and ulcers due to poor blood circulation. It often affected the larynx, causing difficulty for the person to speak, making a very hoarse or raspy speaking. How long it had been in this man is uncertain. We assume that it was unbearable because he came to Jesus really as a last resort. There wasn't any cure for leprosy in that day. And although in the Old Testament the law allowed for a cleansing and individuals who were cured of leprosy, leprosy in those days, there were several different kinds of skin conditions that would be termed as leprosy. And some could be curable. And so there was a series of rituals that they could go through in order to be brought back into the society. This man had an advanced, uncurable form of disease, and it was unbearable. The second thing I think about this is that his despair was unfathomable. His despair was unfathomable. Let me read from the words of Dr. J. Vernon McGee, who is describing how it may have happened. We assume that the man was Jewish. We are not told how the man discovered that he had leprosy, but it could have happened in the following manner. One day he came in from plowing and he said to his wife, "I've got a sore on the palm of my hand that it hurts when I'm plowing." And so he asked if his wife might go ahead and wrap it up for him. The next day he goes back out to the field to do more plowing. And as he comes back in, he notices that the sore is worse. And so then the wife, fearing what might be, encourages him to go to the priest. As he goes to the priest puts him in isolation for 14 days. When he was brought out, the priest would look over the area and found that it was leprosy and that it had spread. McGee goes on to say that the priest told him that he was a leper. And how those words must have pierced him to hear that he was a leper. The heartbroken man said to the priest, "Let me go back home to my family and say goodbye to them." But the priest, because of the nature of the disease that he had, would tell him that he can't, that he has to leave immediately and go outside the city to wherever other lepers may be living together. He didn't have the ability to go home and see his wife or his children. Wasn't able to say goodbye to them. They would go off and they would be alone, and his family would bring food to him to a certain place, and they would place it down on that location, and then they would leave, and then the man would come and get his food and then go back to where he was. And from a distance, he might be able to see his wife or his children, but to that point, he would never have contact with them. Leprosy was a devastating disease in many ways. For one, as I mentioned, it was incurable. It literally was a death sentence. Sometimes the disease itself could remain dormant inside a person for up to 15 years without being symptomatic. And then all of a sudden, one day, a spot comes or a soreness, and then it begins to develop what you fear to be leprosy. Knowing the adverse ramifications, if it were in fact leprosy, we can assume that many might try to hide it. If it was in a place on the body that they could easily hide it with clothing or something, they would try to do that perhaps because they knew that if they went and got pronounced by the priest, they knew that they had to be cast out of society. They couldn't come back and interact with them. They couldn't do the work that they normally did every day or see their family. All those things. So they may have tried to hide it, knowing that they would be ostracized and isolated, their worst fears coming true. Everything about it was repulsive. Lepers were isolated from social life, cast out, unable to participate in society. They couldn't buy or sell in the market. They couldn't go to the synagogue. They couldn't participate in pilgrimages during their lifetime in which they would go to Jerusalem during those annual festivals that occurred. They couldn't engage in discussions among friends down in the corner of the street or in the backyard at neighborhood barbecues. Everything that they used to be able to do was now past, now out of their life. They had to find other things to do. They were treated with disdain, branded as an outcast, at times cruelly treated. If that weren't enough, everywhere they walked, as someone approached them, whoever it might be, a total stranger, a new town, or wherever it might be, they had to holler out, "Unclean! Unclean!" And everybody would disperse. What that word "unclean" literally means is a void. A void. Don't come near me. If a leper refused to leave a town, the authorities could enforce his leaving by threatening with 39 lashes. According to scholar Alfred Edersheim in his book, Life and Times of Jesus, the Messiah, they had to remain at least 6 feet from a healthy person. Or if the wind were blowing from behind them towards a person was coming, they had to remain 150 feet from individuals just to avoid the possibility that the contagion would come on them as well. He continues by noting, Edersheim continues by noting that one rabbi would actually throw stones at lepers to force them to stay away from them. And another rabbi indicated in his writings that if he knew that a leper had walked on a particular street in the town, he would not buy eggs from that vendor. If physical appearance wasn't devastating enough, anything the person touched became defiled and had to be burned. If he entered a room or a house, not only the things that were in the house, but the house itself would have to be burned. If he touched an animal, the animal had to be slaughtered. Rabbis taught that leprosy was second only to touching a dead person in terms of things that would defile an individual. That this man had an advanced case of leprosy helps us understand the likelihood that he was in great despair. Not only was his disease unbearable, his despair was unfathomable, but we also want to note that his devotion was unmistakable. We read here that in our passage that as he approached Jesus, he fell down on his face. Matthew and Mark both indicate that as the man approached him, he fell down in worship of the Lord. His actions violated rabbinical law. For a moment, let's assume that as he came into town, he shouted that all too familiar words, "unclean," and people scattered. If it was an old Western kind of setting, they would have run into buildings, they would have hid behind watering troughs or rain barrels, but they left. And mothers would have gathered their children together and shielded their eyes from seeing the visible ramifications of this disease. Repulsed and disfigured, the man walked down the street. We don't know if this man had ever seen Jesus. We don't know if he knew him. It's possible that he may have, sometimes when Jesus was passing by, gone to hear him speak and listened in the distance away from the crowds that were gathered around him. It's possible even to think that he had heard about or seen Jesus perform some miracles. We don't know that for sure, but he may have witnessed. And it may be that he thought in the back of his mind, if that were the case, he thought in the back of his mind that maybe this Jesus could do something for me. So we don't know if he knew or had heard about Jesus, but we know that when he came into town, he knew that Jesus was the only person who could help him. Whether he knew it because he would have been the only... He knew that Jesus... If he didn't know who Jesus was, he would have known who Jesus was by walking into town and everybody else would have separated and the only one left standing in the middle of the street would have been Jesus. Not taken aback by what he saw in the man.
John MacArthur states, the man was past fear, past shame, past heedless, and heedless of danger to himself or others, literally having nothing to lose by his actions, to go into town and to see if Jesus could help him. As he approached Jesus, he did what we find very few other people doing. It says that he fell down. There came a leper, Matthew 8:2 says, there came a leper and worshipped him. In his actions, he understood something about Jesus that was divine. In that act, he was coming to the one person, the only person who could help him, and he bowed in worship to him. He gives a good lesson in no matter what we do in coming to the Lord, we ought to have an attitude of worship. As we come into God's presence, we ought to have the same response to worship, to recognize that Jesus is the only one with whom we can have someone who can help us with the needs that we have. His devotion was unmistakable. But the fourth thing I see about his condition is that his desire was unquestionable. His desire was unquestionable. We read again in this particular verse, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. You can make me clean. There was only one thing on his mind. He wanted to be cleansed of his leprosy. Notice that the request was not conditional on the ability of Jesus. He didn't come into town and say, Jesus, I don't know if you can do this. I'm hoping you can. He already understood that the Lord was able. The question in his mind was whether or not Jesus was willing. So it wasn't a question of ability. It was a question of whether or not it was the will of Jesus to do that. We know that Jesus can heal us from some illness. We know that Jesus can heal us of some injury. We know that Jesus can take care of financial needs that we might have. So the question isn't whether or not his ability to help us. The question is it his will to help us when we come to him? There is no mistaking the desire of the leper. Now, before we move on, I want you to notice something that's very important in the request. I want you to notice what's absent in what he is asking. He doesn't ask to be healed. What does he ask for? Cleansing. There's a difference. He's not asking to be healed. He's asking to be cleansed. In Isaiah 1, verses 4 to 6, God, through the prophet of Isaiah, is describing the sin of the nation to the disease of leprosy. Leprosy in the Old Testament was a picture of sin, of a person's uncleanness. Like leprosy, sin is deeper than the skin. Sin is more than the acts done. Sin comes from within the heart. Like leprosy, sin needs more than just surface measures to help. Jeremiah 6:14 describes it as just putting a Band-Aid on a wound. This past week, I attended a meeting of Livingston County leaders comprised of educators, several pastors, and other individuals who are a part of the community in an effort to talk about the concerns of our youth, not focusing so much on the 80% of the students, kindergarten through 12th grade, who are doing well, who have an environmental and family system that's helping them through difficulties in life, but that 20% that's sort of marginalized, the ones that are on the fringe. And so there was a group of us, 24 individuals in the Livingston County, who were called together to be able to help identify what can we do to help these students. And as I sat there and listened and participated in the discussion, it was very clear the absence of one thing. And while we came up with some common threads of ways to help those youth that are marginalized, There was one element that was glaringly absent, and that had to do with the heart. It had to do with the sin nature. And we can talk about all the different things that are going on, and we can talk about the social programs and things that a lot of different agencies within the community are offering these students to help them to be successful in life. But unless we take care of the heart, unless we take care of the sin nature, there's always going to be those problems. There's always going to be those programs that will just fall short
of helping them with what they need. Now, whether to appease the four pastors that were in the room or not, I don't know, but many of them offered that, yes, faith of some kind is important. And they talked about it and couched it in the terms that I have discussed before, and you have heard before, that, you know, we're all about the same goal, right? We all have the same end that we want to reach. There's one mountain and one goal at the top of the mountain, and it doesn't matter which path we take to get to the top of the mountain. As long as you get there, that's what the goal is. But I'm here to suggest that according to what the Word of God says and the authority based on Jesus Christ, there's only one way. And so my hope is that as we as pastors, as churches, fundamental churches in this community, look at what the needs are for our youth, people in this county, that we see that it begins and really ends with the Word of God and working in someone's heart. Leprosy is a picture of sin. It reaches down into the very core of an individual. Like leprosy, sin spreads. Like leprosy, sin defiles. Like leprosy, sin isolates the person outside the camp and separates them from God. The man needed and wanted change. He wanted to be cleansed, and he recognized that the only power and grace to do so came from God Himself. What leprosy does to the body, sin does to the soul. It is the perfect picture of what sin looks like. What leprosy looks like to man, sin looks like to God. A person who had leprosy could not benefit from the sacrifice of the high priest. When the high priest went annually to offer the sacrifice on behalf of the people of Israel, the leper was not included in that. He was totally isolated from any kind of advantage that might be gained otherwise. And he was shut out from God. And that's a picture of our sin. We are utterly shut out from God. And we have to come before God and cry out, unclean! Just like the man who came into the temple on one occasion and said, be merciful to me, a sinner. That's how we approach the Lord. This verse shows us the condition of the man who was leprous. It is a picture of the condition of man lost in the blackness of sin. And if that were the end of the story, it would certainly be hopeless for us, wouldn't it? It would be something that we could truly feel the pangs of a leper himself in our own despair. But that's not the end of the story. So we go on and look at in verses 13 and 14, we see the compassion of the Messiah. The condition of the man and then the compassion of the Messiah. Follow with me in those verses. Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. I am willing, he said, be clean. And immediately the leprosy left him. Then Jesus ordered him, don't tell anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them. Now, I mentioned earlier that the rabbis made a special effort to avoid contact with any leper because they didn't want to become ceremonially unclean. What the man did violated the law, but what Jesus did also violated the law, because we see, first of all, the care given by Jesus in that first part of verse 13. The care given by Jesus. I wonder what went through the man's mind. Uncertain about what response Jesus would give to him as he approached him. He wasn't repulsed. Jesus didn't reject him. Instead, he reached out and he touched him. A clear violation of the law. But I wonder what went through his mind to feel the warmth of a human touch, something that he hadn't experienced for who knows how long. That someone cared enough about him to touch him, to reach out and to comfort him. That alone must have been so encouraging to the man. See, Jesus didn't see what the man was. He saw what the man could become. How long has it been since the leper had felt the warmth of that touch? How long had it been since he experienced something other than cruelty or excommunication or contempt from the actions of others? Jesus touched him. And just that touch must have been still an unforgettable experience for him. People go absolutely crazy when they get an autograph or shake a hand or a pat on the back from somebody who's famous. But here the Lord, the Creator of the heaven and the earth, touched the man and encouraged him. Here's a poem that was made into a song a number of years ago, and it's one that you probably have heard, but it was battered and scarred, and the auctioneer thought it hardly worth the while to waste much time on the old violin, but he held it up with a smile. "What am I bid, good people?" he cried. "Who starts the bidding for me? $1, $1, do I have two? $2, who makes it three? $3 once, $3 twice, going for three." But no, from the room far back, a gray-bearded man came forward and picked up the bow. Then, wiping the dust from the old violin and tightening up the strings, he played a melody pure and sweet as the angels sing. The music ceased, and the auctioneer, with a voice that was quiet and low, said, "What now am I bid for this old violin?" And he held it up with a bow. "1,000, 1,000, do I hear two? 2,000, who makes it three? 3,000 once, 3,000 twice, going and gone," said he. The audience cheered, but some of them cried, "We just don't understand. What changed its worth?" Swift came the reply, "The touch of the master's hand." Many a man with his life out of tune, all battered and bruised with hardship, his auction cheap on a thoughtless crowd, much like the old violin. A mess of pottage, a glass of wine, a game, and he travels on. He's going once, he's going twice, he is going and almost gone. But the master comes, and the foolish crowd never can quite understand the worth of a soul and the change that is wrought by the touch of a master's hand. I wonder today, have you been touched by the master's hand? Do you need a touch by his hand? The leper did. Not knowing what to expect, he went to see Jesus. Notice that Jesus' compassion didn't end with just a caring touch. We also see in the part of the verse that the cleansing that was given by Jesus. Not only did he care, but he cleansed. If the touch was welcoming to the leper, the words of Jesus had to be incredibly freeing for him. We don't know how many years prior to this the man had heard those ominous words from the priest diagnosing and condemning him with leprosy. He now hears the words coming from the lips of the only person he believed who could help him. He asked, "If you will, you can make me clean." And Jesus responded by saying, "I am willing. Be clean." Unlike Naaman, who needed to go and dip himself 7 times in the Jordan River, this man was instantaneously cleansed of his leprosy. Our text tells us that immediately he was clean, made whole. That means instantaneous. As soon as the words left the lips of Jesus, he was cleansed. Today, there is a cure for leprosy. If it's caught early enough, leprosy can be cured, but it doesn't do anything for the effects that may have happened, the damaged skin or extremities that were a result of the leprosy. Back then, there was no cure. And I believe that when Jesus said, "Be cleansed," that any visible signs of the disease were automatically gone. Extremities that had been worn away because of the lack of feeling were made whole again. Any scars as a result of the leprosy were made new. Jesus cleans fully. He cleanses wholly. He was totally cleansed of the dreaded disease. No lasting effects of it. It was as if he had never had it. And isn't it that way with sin as well? When we come to Jesus and ask him to cleanse us from sin, it is instantaneous. It's immediate. It doesn't take time for that to occur. When we come to Jesus and ask to be cleansed of our sin, it is immediate. It takes place in us. He doesn't look at us and say we're a hopeless case or a lost cause. He doesn't push us away or reject us. He doesn't go run and hide. When he touched the man, he had no fear of contracting leprosy. When he took our sin on himself, he had no fear of becoming a sinner. He became sin for us, but he did not become a sinner. He is willing to touch us and declare us to be clean. Herbert Lockyer writes, "The ugly, festering sores the leper bore in his body were the outward and visible tokens of the sin in the soul. And in Christ's miracle of healing, we have a symbol of His power to save from sin. No matter how vile a sinner may be, the touch still has its ancient power to cleanse. The Mosaic Law in Leviticus 14 gives a beautiful picture of what is to take place in the cleansing of a leper. He was to take two pigeons. One pigeon was to be sacrificed, and its blood was to be sprinkled on the other pigeon, and then also on the one who was a leper himself. And it was a way of cleansing. And then the live bird was let loose, and it symbolizes that Jesus took on our sin, and He freed us as He ascended. He took that with Him, and we have been cleansed. There can be no better cleansing than what Jesus did, and there can be no other cleansing than what Jesus can do. The story shows us that anyone who comes to Christ seeking to be cleansed will not be cast from His presence. I like the hymn, "There's a fountain filled with blood drawn from Emmanuel's veins, and sinners plunged beneath the flood lose all their guilty stains," every one of them. When we come to Jesus with our need, there are no sweeter words that were spoken than, "I am willing, be clean." Would you agree? I am willing, be clean. Verse 14 shows us the command given by Jesus. In this command, Jesus showed respect for the law. He told the individual to go back to the priest, to show himself to the priest, to go through the process, the rituals. He wasn't saying he was above the law. He was saying go and abide by the law. He was showing respect to it. It required, as I noted, that he had rituals to perform. And in essence, he's telling the man, go obey the law. Don't be above it. A clean bill of health by the priest would serve as a testimony to them and to all others that Jesus respected the law himself. The priest had to either acknowledge that Jesus did it, or they would indict themselves knowing that Jesus was the one who had done it, and they didn't believe it. So they could either accept it or reject it. Cleansing would be a testimony of his power and a confirmation of who he was. He also commanded the man not to tell any other people because he didn't want to be known just as a miracle worker. Too much emphasis on his power would only serve the further desire the people had for political deliverance from the Messiah, and he didn't want that. Jesus did not want widespread acclaim. He came as a humble servant with a primary task to seek and to save. We have taken a look at the condition of the man and the compassion of the Messiah, and in closing in verses 15 and 16, the circulation among the multitudes. Yet the news about him spread all the more so that crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their sicknesses. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. First thing I want you to see in verse 15 is that they applauded Jesus. You know, who can keep news like that quiet? A healing, you know, how often had a priest received somebody who was cured of leprosy? Probably not very often, if at all, in their lifetime. And so you will well imagine that the news of what Jesus had done and the man who was cleansed would spread like wildfire. Maybe he did it. Maybe it was his wife who got on Facebook or on the phone and Twitter or whatever thing that they did, that they do now. Maybe she was the one who did it. Or maybe the priest had done it. We don't know, but news spread out. I don't want you to miss either with the physical cleansing of leprosy and especially not with the spiritual cleansing from sin. Both are because of God's grace. Both are because of God's grace. He did nothing but ask, and Jesus was the one who did all the work. It's the same way with our sin and salvation. We ask to be cleansed, and Jesus responds, "I will be clean." He did all the work. Second thing I want you to see in verse 15 is that they appealed to Jesus. Not only did they applaud Him and come from everywhere because of the news that they heard, but they appealed to Him. And what did they appeal to Him about? There are two things in the text. It says that they wanted to hear Him teach, and they wanted to be healed by His touch. They wanted to listen to Him. And those who had diseases wanted to be touched by Him. But unfortunately, they missed the significance of the cleansing. It was symbolic of the cleansing that He offers from sin. They only wanted healing from physical abnormalities and injuries. They wanted him only for his healing power. And they appealed to him that they too might be healed. And then in verse 16, we see the last point, and that is, the absence from Jesus. Their absence from Jesus. As we have noted before, Jesus needed time to be refreshed from ministry. He sought times away from the crowds, not to avoid them, but because he needed to be refreshed. He needed to spend time with the Father, to just be reminded again of the mission that he was about, not to heal people. That was just a way of helping to authenticate the word that he had and the work that he was doing on behalf of mankind. And so he needed to go back and spend time with the Father. He sought out that time to be alone and absent from the multitudes to be strengthened. The multitudes may look at you and consider your former life and remember that you were once an outcast, worth nothing in their opinion. But the Master comes along and he recognizes your potential and he touches you and he cleanses you. He sees your true worth. He sees what you can become by his touch. And his touch now makes you priceless. What kind of touch today do you need from the Master? Come to him and ask if he is willing. Let's pray.